Unlocking retirement funds could get easier for federal law enforcement officers. Right now, officers can't access their TSP accounts until they're eligible to retire, and sometimes that's as long as 10 years. But a new bill in Congress could fix that. John Adler is national president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, FLEOA. John, it's always good to have you on the program. What is the big problem with the law the way that it stands, and how is it affecting law enforcement officers and government, John?
Great to be here, Francis. When the Pension Protection Act of 2006 was passed, it defined the qualified public safety employee or officer on a state and local level only. So what that meant by way of implementation of that act is that only state and local law enforcement officers were able to access their defined benefit plan or defined contribution plan monies or funds at age 50, which is the general age where most law enforcement officers are eligible to retire. So it sort of excluded federal law enforcement and put us at obviously an economic disadvantage, which means that our folks who reach age 50 and are eligible to retire, if they were to access their TSP funds, would face the very formidable IRS 10% penalty, where not only would you recognize it as your taxable income, but you get a 10% penalty on top of that. And it was one of those sort of glaring inequities that needed to be fixed or addressed and fixed.
Do we have a sense of how it got that way in the original bill? Is it just an oversight that somebody that was writing the legislation didn't understand how it worked, or how did it get in there?
Yeah, I think maybe a Skillcraft pen ran dry and it was an oversight. And I say that, Francis, because another part of the legislation actually did include feds. So it's just interesting how that wasn't put in there. You know, the thing that came of concern and how this came about was feedback we had gotten from our members, which includes IRS CID special agents, of inconsistent messaging, surprise, surprise, from the IRS on the question as to whether or not that act did cover federal law enforcement. So by way of practice, it was the understanding of federal law enforcement that we were included. Yet when we requested time and time again from the IRS for an official ruling, we didn't get one. And it said that we had to ultimately go to Congressman Reichert to make official requests on our behalf, just because we didn't want our members to be subjected to IRS roulette in terms of the possibility of an audit or even violating the law, more importantly. So we ultimately got back something in writing from the IRS saying, no, federal law enforcement doesn't apply, which prompted us to move forward with both Congressman Reichert and Pascrell, who happened to be the co-chairs on the House Law Enforcement Caucus.
So that's the right place for this to start. Where I was going to go next is, what does this mean, John, that it's these two members who are pushing this legislation? Does that give you hope that this is something that can go somewhere?
It does. You know what? And it gives me even a greater hope, maybe on a broader sense, Francis, that, you know, we've got the donkey and the elephant, if you will, cooperating and sort of embracing the importance of what we do. And, you know, the timing of it was that the bill was introduced right at the beginning of National Police Week. And, you know, Congressman Reichert and Pascrell have been great supporters. Their staff have worked very well together to assist us on messaging issues out to the broader Congress, which otherwise doesn't necessarily play nice in the sandbox. So the both of them, you know, have been great in terms of leading or taking the lead on issues that impact not just federal law enforcement, but state and local as well.
John Adler is national president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. I would think, though, certainly having two allies like that is good, but I would think it's hard to go around and push anything and get push back on it when somebody could be perceived as being against the law enforcement officers. It's kind of like being against the vets. Nobody wants to be there.
Right, and that's a common sense observation, Francis, which, you know, some contingents within our Congress don't necessarily possess.
All right, fair enough.
So sometimes we're walking on what you might call logic holes.
Yes.
You know, some people, their feet get burned and they recognize it, and others, they're just numb.
They don't feel anything.
No. That's the world we live in. But you're right. I mean, we were sort of seizing upon the theme and just the passion of what goes into National Police Week. And obviously, this isn't something that's going to be a, well, maybe bad pun, but tax our government and sort of impact our economy or impact even the deficit just by allowing those. I mean, Francis, the whole idea about us being eligible to retire at age 50 is the nature of our work. And we are public safety officers. And by the way, for the listeners, this includes our firefighters as well under that definition in the federal realm. You know, we're as viable and as valuable as our state and local brother and sisters. So that's why it's important that when we are eligible to retire, you know, we can access our money. I mean, Lord knows our pensions aren't the greatest, so we need to sort of draw upon other financial means to get through this challenging life, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, bills don't take pause for any of us.
Yeah, that's right. I think about that, and I imagine you get some pushback at various times on the retire at age 50 idea, but I certainly am well aware of the fact that someone who does 25 years in law enforcement or first response as a firefighter or an emergency technician, it's not the same as like my 25 year career. The wear and tear on the body and the wear and tear on the mind and the things that some of these men and women have to see is really unbelievable.
Yeah, although I wouldn't belittle your career, Francis, because you're subjected to a lot of stress from nonsense, probably from people like myself. So I sort of have great respect for what you have to endure in putting together a great program. But you're right. I mean, you're right. Seriously, you're right in terms of it does take its toll. It's sort of like, you know, it's a quiet disease, this whole hypertension, stress, blood pressure thing. And, you know, a lot of us, we don't see it coming until the next thing we're knocked on our backside and still at a relatively young, tender age, whether it's 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever. And, you know, we need to sort of transition and prepare for a new phase in life and sort of leave this to a younger, more vigorous workforce to enforce the law and keep our country and our citizens safe.
You've been on my program many times, and nonsense is not a word I would ever use to describe our conversations, John. What is next for this piece of legislation? What's the track that you see it taking?
It's a good question. You know, I mean, maybe the idealist in me, and that's not a significant portion of me, would like to see it fast-tracked. We know we're going to appeal to the party leadership, both the House and the Senate side. We obviously want to get a companion bill introduced in the Senate. I think we have a couple of good folks lined up who are also willing to embrace the merit and the importance of this, much like Congressman Ryken and Pascrell did. So, Francis, I mean, we're going to move forward from a positive mindset that we're going to try and have it fast-tracked, irrespective of a mostly dysfunctional Congress right now, and simply because this is an issue that transcends, you know, drinking with the donkeys and eating with the elephants. So, you know, we're going to kind of make the full push forward and see what happens.
I appreciate your insight on this, and we'll look forward to having you keep us updated on it, John. Thanks very much for your time today, and hope you have a great weekend.
You too, pal.